Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to episode 282 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy baseball podcast. I'm your host, Mike Gianella, and Brett Sayre could not be with us this week, but we have a guest, and it's an internal guest, somebody I really enjoy reading at Baseball Prospectus. I'm sure you enjoy reading him too. If you like closers, or even if you don't like closers, I'm sure you enjoy reading Tim's stuff. It's Tim McCullough. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I don't know what part of the neck of the woods you're in, or where you are, but you know, things are kind of starting to open up here. I'm going to my office now for my day job a couple days a week, so you know, things are okay, and baseball is around the corner. It's March 25th as we're recording this. The season's going to start a little bit late because of the owner-imposed lockout, as I like to keep calling it, to remind people who did that. But we're going to have baseball soon. I mean, I know we have spring training, but we're going to have actual, real, you know, baseball soon. So I think we can all be excited about that, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely psyched. Can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward not only to seeing some Red Sox, but also seeing the Woo Sox.
Yeah, I love minor league baseball. So yeah, I'm in like on the New Jersey Pennsylvania border. So Trenton last year had the AAA, you know, Blue Jays because of the pandemic and all the rescheduling that they had to do. But you know, I get up to Lehigh Valley. I'll go to Lakewood in New Jersey, which is like, you know, high A. I there's a bunch of minor league baseball kind of like with an hour and a half drive, and I love minor league ball. I'll probably do that more this year than the majors, just because it's so, you know, it's so expensive, and I also don't live in Philadelphia anymore, so it's a little bit further to drive, and like actually, you know, by the time you get there, come back, all that, it's a big thing.
Yeah, for me, I mean, the stadium in Worcester, Massachusetts, only opened up last year, so this is only the second season of the Woo Sox.
Oh, wow.
And then the other team I love to go up and see is I love to go up to Portland, Maine, and see the AA team up there, the Sea Dogs.
Yeah, years ago when I was, you know, many years ago when I was young and ambitious, I remember. This was like kind of when Double A was just really coming into the Northeast. I wanted to be ambitious and get to all the parks in Portland, just because the distance is, I think, the one I didn't. Well, I didn't get to like Akron either, but like I got to most of them. But Portland and Akron were just a little bit too much of a drive for me, which is a shame.
Yeah, now I love those minor league games, though. I mean, $6, you sit behind home plate.
Yep. Yeah. No, I mean, I remember seeing like Vlad Jr. here on like a super cold day, like, you know, years ago when he was in Double A, and there was nobody there because it was April and it was like a miserable Northeast day. You know what I'm talking about? But it's just great.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about we could talk about this all day, but we're going to actually focus on Tout Wars. So, as you know, I'm sure most of my listeners know, Tout Wars is one of the expert or industry analyst leagues, along with Labor, and there's a few others, but those are the two big ones. And Tim, how long have Tim's in Tout Wars? Tim, how long have you been in Tout Wars?
I've been in Tout Wars since 2013.
Yeah, so Tim and I go way back. I go back a little bit further. I've been in since 2010, and I've bounced back and forth between the mono leagues, between the National League and the American League, and this year I decided to, for at least one of my industry leagues, to do a mixed league, just because there's more mixed coverage. I think people are focusing more on that. I feel like doing four or five mono leagues really isn't the best service to the readers and the listeners here, so that was a primary driving force. And Tim's in this league as well, which is kind of interesting. We didn't really plan it out this way, but Tim and I will be competitors this year in the mixed draft league. And Tim, have you been in the draft league since? Has that been your league since the beginning?
Yeah, this is the only Tout Wars league I've played in, and it is tough. This is a tough mixed league. This is a I call them a group of sharks. I mean, yeah, these guys are unbelievable.
Yeah, all the Tout leagues are, I mean, it's nothing against Labor, but like all the Tout leagues are, like the NL and the AL are both like tough as well. Like it's not like a home league or, you know, even, I'm not going to name any, like a couple industry leagues where sometimes there's one or two people, you know, they're not as engaged, or, you know, maybe it's an online draft and somebody, you can tell somebody like disappears for a few minutes. Yeah, people here, there's no one here who, you know, doesn't mean business. And like it's a pretty, you know, impressive group of names. Like, you know, Adam Ronis, who I think won last year, right, Tim?
Or yeah, was it DJ Ronis has actually won two out of the last 3 years or something crazy like that.
Yeah. DJ Short of NBC Sports Edge, Shelly, God, I'm going to mispronounce her name. Maybe you can do me a solid here, because I've actually barely...
I always thought it was Verustrate.
I think that's correct, Shelly Verustrate. I have such admiration for Shelly's work. Shelly's at Fangraphs. We just have never really interacted on social media. Tim McLeod, I've known Tim for a while. Seth Trackman, Ray Murphy, Scott White, Charlie Weigert. I'm just going to read all the names at this point. Perry Van Hook, Rudy Gamble, who I, you know, consider a friend at Razzball, and he's, you know, friend of the show. AJ Mass, who I've actually met because he's here in the Northeast as well, ESPN. Jeff Barton and Anthony Perry. So yeah, it's a tough group of names. You probably know most of them. And so Tim, I got to start with like kind of the tough question. Have you won this league before?
I have not won this league.
Have you come close?
Finished in fourth place last year. That was my best finish in 8 years.
Okay. Yeah, it's not a knock either. I won Tout Wars NL in 2015, and that's the only time I've won. And I think some people are like, oh, you've only won once, you know, in a dozen years. It's like, well, you know, it's not really easy to win one of these things twice, you know, so let alone once. So you just have to kind of realize that when you're in a league of sharks like this is a 15-teamer, so your odds are even a little bit steeper in terms of the number of people in the league.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's fairly deep, 30-man rosters. You know, so we go, you know, 450 players deep.
Yeah. So let me ask you. So you had the, I think, well, one thing about Tout, so it's not quite the NFBC, you know, Kentucky, you know, style pick where you just throw your name into a randomizer, it spits it out. But it is similar where you get to pick your spot based off of last year's finish. And you wound up with the fifth slot, correct? Yeah. So, you know, I don't think I want to, I kind of want to start by asking you from a broad standpoint. I was in the 12th spot, so I don't think we really butted heads all that much, but what do you have a general strategy for this type of draft? Now, before you answer, just to remind our listeners, this is on base as opposed to average. Otherwise, it's a roto, you know, 5x5, like pretty standard for that format. Do you have a strategy that's like a base strategy? And then, you know, were there changes you made based on last year? I'm just kind of curious as to what your approach is for this type of draft.
Yeah, I did. Last year, I actually waited a little bit on pitching. And I found that was problematic because there was nothing on the waiver wire. I mean, it was really tough to get anything off of the waiver wire. So this year I tried to go a little bit heavier with pitching early. You know, every year, I have this problem every year with speed, with drafting speed. I hate straight up speed guys. I can't stand drafting guys like that. So I tried to get a balanced sort of team in terms of power and speed production. I tried to take as many players as I could who could produce both. So if there were two, you know, those are two strategies that I employed this year that I have not in previous years. A little bit, went with pitching a little bit early, and tried to get a balanced team in terms of power and speed, while also including that OBP element. And I guess there's one more, and that is that last year I only took one closer in the draft. And then at the end, you know, for the reserve rounds, I took a bunch of spec closers, you know, guys that I thought would end up with the job. And that actually worked out fairly well, but I lucked out. I really lucked out. You know, in that I was able to pick up several closers on the waiver wire along the way. Who just, you know, gave me 7 or 8 or 10 or as many as 12 saves. And I also, Jordan Romano was one of the guys that I picked up. And he ended up getting the job in May and carrying it through the rest of the season. So I really kind of lucked out. This year, I made sure to take some closers in the draft this time. And I actually ended up with 3, which is kind of crazy for me. I've never drafted that many in this league. But I took 3 clubs.
Yeah, let's kind of start at the top. So, you know, it's interesting that you said you don't like drafting speed guys, because the first guy you took, I mean, I know he's not just speed, but the first guy you took is Trey Turner. And I was a little, you know, hearing you say, I was a little surprised. Now, in most drafts, he's been going first or second. Here, this is kind of the OBP difference because, so just to offer some additional background, this draft was on March 8th. So Fernando Tatis Jr., pre-injury, went first, which I probably would have taken Juan Soto first here because of on base, but, you know, I can see it. It's certainly a fine pick. You know, then Soto went second, then Jose Ramirez third, Ronald Acuña Jr. fourth. I feel like these are all pretty like chalky picks. You know, I was watching, it was an online draft. I wasn't really surprised. And then Turner went fifth, which I thought was fair. But you're definitely not quite getting the on-base boost that you'd get with some other hitters. So I assume you were just, you know, fine with that.
Yeah, for him, you know, first of all, in that lineup, I mean, that Dodgers lineup is going to be sick this year.
I keep thinking of it as a National. I can't get that out of my head.
I mean, the main reason why I took him there is obviously for the speed. I mean, you take him for the speed.
Yeah.
But, you know, he also is going to provide some power. And then I think the counting stats this year, especially runs, he's going to put up some crazy run totals. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he scores 120 runs this year. I mean, he's definitely going to break 100. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, even without the average, like, so, you know, I'm a big advocate for Turner at 1-1 because, you know, as you know, Tim, if you've heard me talk about this or write about it, you know, I'm always like, average is a category, don't forget it, and Turner's a monster there. I mean, you lose that here, but he still offers so much, and it's not like his on-base percentage is bad, and I think that's something sometimes people get lost in these leagues, and I'll be honest, when I started here, I kind of made that mistake too, because I think my first year, I accidentally paid enough attention to on base. Sometimes I was a last second, you know, person that they asked. So the next year I overcompensated. As a result, I had these guys who were like really good at on base, but didn't do anything else or enough anywhere else. And that's kind of the balance. So I think you hit the balance here with Turner. And yeah, I like it because what that meant is it meant you didn't have to go, you know, like fishing for speed like later on. So it was a good pick. And then you mentioned, you know, you're pushing a little more for pitching now. I fell into pocket aces. It wasn't my intent, but I drafted Corbin Burns, which I was a little surprised by. I thought someone might have taken him, given the way pitching goes in these drafts, before it came to my pick at 12. Scherzer, I'm not surprised by, because I really like him, and I figured if he was there, I'd grab him. So then you, you took Aaron Nola. Now, did you want Nola, or did you see some of the other pitchers like going off the board, like Jacob DeGrom went, Brandon Woodruff went, Zach Wheeler went? Were you feeling nervous, or was Nola someone you were like, yeah, I think he's the pick here?
He was one of my targets here.
Okay.
The guy I really wanted, though, was Scherzer. That was my target.
Yeah, I mean, the only way I don't take Scherzer is if, like, you know, looking at some of the names here, like Freddie Freeman, you know, who went in the first round, like there's maybe one or two other guys who I might have taken. You know, again, this is funny, like Bo Bichette, I talked to Rudy, you know, Gamble about this, like, you know, I think, it might have actually been during we recorded a podcast that didn't exactly work out, but it might have been elsewhere, but in an average league, Bichette doesn't go, you know, to the second round. And, you know, I might have taken him instead of Burns, you know, with the first pick. Because of the on-base penalty, that's why I took Scherzer. So that was part of it. So, yeah, Nola's everybody's bounce back guy, right? Like, everybody looks at him going, yeah, you know, the peripherals were better, he should bounce back.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing about Nola is he either seems to kill it or just kind of fall flat on his face, one or the other. You know, but, I mean, last year wasn't awful. The problem is home runs. I mean, you know, he needs to control the home run.
Well, he's in a bad park for that, too. Which is the challenge. Like, if you put him in a different park, like even a neutral park, I think it would make a difference. Like, you know, Citizens Bank is just, it's a rough place for, you know, for fly balls, especially in the summer.
Yeah. So, I mean, a 4.63 ERA last year, it certainly wasn't ideal, but I think he can do better than that. I mean, he's generally under 4. I mean, he's been under 4.
Yeah. And I think his DRA was like a 3.5. I should have it in front of me, but, you know, his DRA was significantly lower. I mean, it wasn't like ace level, but it definitely spoke to a pitcher who deserved better.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem there, too, is the defense. I mean, Philadelphia defense is just awful. And I'm really sad that they didn't really do anything about it.
Well, they might have made it worse. And you didn't know that when you drafted, but, you know, because they hadn't signed, you know, some of these players, but they might have actually made it a little worse, which seems impossible, but, yeah.
Yeah, I was actually hoping that they were going to take one of the shortstops, maybe Correa, you know.
I thought
they were going to maybe do something about their defense up the middle, but, you know. Now we're relying on Odubel Herrera in center field, and I mean, it's just not.
Didi Gregorius or Stott, who I like him as a player, but I don't defensively know how great he's going to be at short. So, yeah, it's a weird mix. And then you took, so you speak of players I like, it's weird because, you know, you're always, like, waiting and waiting in these drafts, and, like, after. Something I like about the salary cap draft is you have a lot of control, right? Like, if you're like, oh, things are cheap, or I like these players, you can just dive in and take, you know, one, two, even three people. Here you're playing the waiting game, and this is where I don't have a hitter yet. Marcus Semien has kind of been falling to me, like, mid to late third. So when you took him, I have to admit I was kind of disappointed.
Yeah, he was a target for me. I targeted him last year, and boy, did I profit on that one. I did really well with him last year. And I don't see any reason why he can't. There'll be some regression. I mean, he's not going to.
No, he's going to probably hit like 30 home runs and steal like 10 to 15 bases. My thing about Semien is that I feel like, I mean, I know you can't completely throw 2020 out, but if 2020 hadn't happened, we'd be talking about what a superstar he is, like, more in real life than fantasy. But he's had two, like, incredible seasons in 2019 and to a lesser degree in 2021. And I feel like people are just sort of blowing that off. And it's like, I think he's a really good player, no matter what the statistical shape of his contributions are. I think you're just looking at somebody who's going to be a great player. I mean, I wouldn't reach for him in, you know, the beginning of the second round, but where you took him is fine.
Yeah, I was happy to get him there.
And then it's funny because, you know, you mentioned not, like, wanting to go speed early, and I generally don't. I'm the same as you. I don't like to get it. I sometimes then in the middle rounds have to be like, ooh, should I take this guy? But just based on how my values fell, I got Whit Merrifield, like, when it came back to me at the end of the third, and then Randy Arozarena, who I've kind of been targeting, but this is the only league I've gotten him in the fourth. And it's just funny because the way it made things shake out for me, and you know, I'll have a recap on this next week, a written recap. It kind of just made me think, I don't really need to even think about speed anymore. Or I can, you know, take it when it comes. I don't have to think, oh gosh, I have to get a speed guy. So I was kind of surprised by that. Like, I'm not even a big Merrifield person, but I was pretty surprised that he was, you know, he was there. And honestly, like, Starling Marte went three picks before Merrifield, which gave me the feeling of, well, this is not going to be people pushing speed up like I've seen in some other drafts I've done.
Yeah. No, I was actually a little surprised to see you take Merrifield. He's the kind of guy that scares me off. I don't know why.
It's a weird thing because he's been going like, you know, and again, this is on base, but he's been going like kind of around the 2-3 turn. I think is too high, but you kind of get to this point where you're like, well, I get it. Like, you know, I understand that, you know, there's some regression here. I've talked about the fact that, like, second base in particular, like, makes me nervous because historically speaking, he's at the age where the cliff is or is really close, and it happens fast. And, like, the examples of players that it's worked out, you know, you're talking about, like, Joe Morgan and, like, one or two other, like, Hall of Famers. And then if you're not that level of player, like, it wouldn't surprise if Whit Merrifield's out of baseball in 3 years, just because that's the way it goes at second base. But I also think that this is where the steals problem comes in. It's kind of what you're saying about Sammy. Merrifield doesn't have to do what he did last year. If he steals 25 to 30 bases and plays, I think I'm okay here.
Yeah. No, I think he did fine with him. I mean, if he does anything like he did last year, I mean, 40 stolen bases, that's...
Yeah, I don't even think he'll do that. I have to go back and look at the, you know, what the projections say, but I think I'm fine with him where he's projected. So you in the fourth and fifth round, I'm going to try to start to lump these together because, you know, otherwise we're going to be here for hours. You took Pete Alonso and Jose Berríos. So you got your power, like you added your big time power bat, and you got your second starter. So I've been, and it looks like you kind of have a similar philosophy. I've been trying to get like three starters in the first 7 or 8 rounds. You came close to that. We'll kind of talk about that in a bit. But you got your second starter here, and you definitely got your power.
That was the plan. I mean, you know, first base kind of falls off fast. Once you get out of the first, you know, I don't know, 8-10 rounds, it starts to fall off fast.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I wanted to get my first baseman early. That's why I went for Alonso there. And then, you know, Berríos is really kind of my second ace.
It's funny because I'm going to jump around a little from rounds because, like I said, Tim, I think if we do this round by round, we're gonna be here for an hour and a half, which I think we might love, and I think there might be 5 listeners who might love, but our producer and some others might not love it. So I wound up drafting like a bunch of first baseman like rounds 11 through 13, like 3 in a row, and it wasn't a plan by any means, but. Well, first of all, I am apparently the only person in the world who is Ryan Mountcastle's friend. That's not quite true. Paul Spohr of Fangraphs likes him as well. And I know there's one or two other analysts, but everybody thinks he's going to like not hit home runs because they're moving the fences back. And, you know, my two things, well, I've got 3 things about that, which is like, one, if you look at the spray chart, he's not a pull hitter, so they're not moving all the fences back. They're moving the left field fence and kind of playing with the dimensions a little bit. Two, he's a 25-year-old hitter, and there's room for growth. I think it's very descriptive to say, yeah, if he does what he did last year, he's going to fall off, which, yes, of course. And then three, it's just kind of the weird idea of, you know, he had a horrible April, and I remember this because I had him a couple leagues, and then from May 1st on, he and Alonso were very similar players, and I'm not suggesting that Mountcastle is going to be Pete Alonso. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that I think people are forgetting how bad that first month was and looking at all the numbers and kind of extrapolating from there.
I kind of agree with you on Mountcastle. I think, you know, he could be great. I mean, he did hit 33 home runs last year.
Yeah, and that's about what I'm not really expecting to jump up. I do think the dimensions will hurt him a little. I just think if he hits 30 home runs or like 28 to 30, he's fine. And the other piece is, this is kind of where having the draft board in front of you would help. I kind of want to, go into a general point with you about this. Did you take anyone specifically for on base? I think you took Yoel Moncada in the seventh round. That's definitely an on base pick, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. I took on base wherever I could get it. If it was there, I took it. If I felt like I needed something at that particular point in the draft, I really didn't. I didn't pay too much attention to on base at that point.
Well, this kind of leads to a broader question. So, and maybe I should have started with this. Like, how do you draft? Because, as you probably know, I'm very rankings oriented. So what I tend to do is I tend to start out with like a master list, and I seldom deviate from that list, especially like the first 10 to 12 rounds. Like that list is almost my gospel. And then later, it comes down to need, where it's like, okay, well, if I have two closers and a closer's at the top of my board, I'm not going to take a third closer, the 12th round. I mean, unless it's, ridiculous, great closer. But do you do something similar? Like, what's your kind of broader process?
It's kind of uncanny, Mike. I mean, I'm the same way. The first 10 rounds, I've got my list that I put together, my rankings list. And, I use the axe on the site, and that's where I start.
Good plug.
I did it last year, and it worked really well for me. I was really happy with my finish, so I'm doing it again this year. But I kind of play around with the numbers a little bit, move guys around.
Oh, sure. I do the same thing. I mean, I actually am, as I have my bid limits on the site. Another good plug. They're available now. I start with that, and then I kind of use the axe to, go off of that, especially for a league like this with on base. And, to kind of go back, like one thing about the Mountcastle pick, my on base guys were Joey Gallo in the fifth round, which if you don't play on base sounds kind of wacky. But I'm sure you saw, like, looking at the axe. The funny thing is, if I had used the axe's raw projections for him, like, this is kind of a great example of where you meddle, right? Like, I think I would have had him... I would have had him in the third round without any intervention. Like, if I just went with the axe, like, I think the axe had him. Oh, the axe had him 28th overall, like, period, among everybody. That you're right. So I made my adjustments that had him 37, but I would have been taking him in the third or fourth round. And I'm like, well, I get what the formula says, but I don't want to take Joey Gallo in the fourth round. So when he's sitting there in the fifth round and my ranks, have him, I push him down to 47. That was kind of my cheat. So when he's still sitting there at 72 overall, I'm like, well, I have to take him, right? Like, I can't just, keep letting him go. And then my other guy was Christian Yelich in the seventh round. And again, that's an on-base adjustment. He literally went where his ADP was on the day of the draft, like his batting average ADP. So I feel like I got a little bit of a bonus there with him.
No, that's, I usually go the same way. I go about 10 rounds, sticking to my list as much as I possibly can. And then after 10 rounds, the variance starts to creep in.
I am curious, you took Ryan Presley in the sixth. I mentioned Moncada in the seventh. You took Matt Chapman in the eighth, Eduardo Rodriguez and Jared Kelnick in the 10th. So all those players were pretty much like chalky for you or right at or near the top of your list?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Gurriel also, Lourdes Gurriel.
So that was the 12th, it looks like, yeah. So who's the first player that you kind of, and what round were you sort of like, okay, I'm going to like go here based more on need as opposed to where I have him? Or do you not remember?
Anything after the 10th round. I mean, I pretty much stick to, 10 rounds of being very, very careful. And then, after that, it starts to become need, and I worry less about, I worry less about reaching. If there's a player I want, I really want as a target, I'll go ahead and get him,
Yeah. I just, something I wondered, taking Moncada and Matt Chapman, like, back-to-back, if there's a mistake that I made in the draft, it was not pushing for a third baseman. I got Alec Bohm like all the way in the 20th, and I backed him up with Brian Anderson on the reserve. So I like Brian Anderson, but you know, one or two places, like I think DJ Stewart took Alex Bregman in the 5th, and I was like, oh, you know, I was hoping he'd get back to me. And there were like one or two, I think Nolan Arenado was another one I was hoping would get back to me. And Josh Donaldson was one where that was one case where I think he was at or right up at the top of my sheet. And I'm like, well, how many of these on-base guys do I really necessarily want to have? And it was early enough. And of course he went. And then like the final insult was I got sniped on Patrick Wisdom, by AJ Mass. I wanted Wisdom over Bohm. And you know, this was before the VR signing. So actually now I like Bohm better, but it was just a very frustrating thing. So I don't know if you saw that with the third baseman, and that's why you had them ranked that way, or, you know, if there was something else going on there.
Yeah. And that was one of the reasons why I took Moncada when I did.
Was this before the Jays trade, by the way, with Chapman? I don't even.
It was. Okay. It was. And, you know, actually, you know, you keep bringing Chapman up.
Yeah, I don't mean to, like, you know, single you out on him. I don't think it's a bad pick. And again, it's an on-base league. Like, that's important to remember. Like, this is not in an average league. If you took him here, I'd kind of be like, why would you do that?
No, and, you know, he's actually not great on base either. You know, if there was one player that I would kind of take back, Chapman is the one guy. I wasn't happy with that pick.
Yeah, I mean, well, for me it would be Will Smith, the pitcher, but that's because when we drafted, he was the closer. And you know, it's funny. My strategy in 15 team mixed is try to get a top 10 closer. Try to get a second tier closer, but don't take them too early. And then try to get one reliever all the way in the back who's a spec play. And I went value, so I felt so in TGFBI I got Jordan Romano. And Jordan Romano, I think I had the max pick on him. I went back and looked. I think he went 102nd in my bracket, so I got him the latest. Yeah, so Will Smith was similar here, where compared to the NFBC ADP, he was like 20-some picks or maybe close to 30 after he was. And this, again, going back to at the time, like not now because he's obviously dropping. And I felt pretty good. I'm like, well, you know, I wanted Romano, but he already went. I'm pretty happy with Will Smith at this price point. And, of course, you know, Kenley Jansen signs with the, you know, with Atlanta already. I'm kind of like, you know, I don't like to throw a category away, but should I? Like, it's one of those weird things already where I'm like, well, I'm going to certainly try to fab some players, but I'm also not going to be one of those people who, you know, blows $300 or $400 on, you know, the next big thing just to, you know, just to try to get a few saves.
It's funny that you bring that up. That's something that I did last year. I think I told you, I took a couple guys in reserves, but also I was very aggressive with trying to get saves off the waiver wire early in the season. And that turned out to be a mistake because I burned a lot of fab. I don't want to do this year.
Yeah, and it looks like with, you know, at least with who you started with. So we mentioned Presley. I like him a lot. Camilo Duvall, who I think is the closer. I know that it's kind of hard to know what they're doing in San Francisco, but I've had to guess it's him. And then Matt Barnes. I suspect Barnes is the closer. You know, it's funny. I thought Jansen was going to sign in Boston. That was kind of my prediction. I had a feeling it wasn't going back to the Dodgers. I know a lot of people thought he was going back there. I'm like, well, I think if the Dodgers wanted him, they would have taken care of business, you know, beforehand, and he would have been back. So I like Garrett Whitlock, but I feel like Whitlock is not going to be, you know, a one-inning guy. I think he's going to be more of a multi-inning, and they're going to stretch him out or whatever. So, yeah, you got three closers. That's a pretty solid strategy. And then, you know, in the last, very last round, you did something I really liked, which in a league like this is underrated. You got Chad Green. Now, I think some people don't really understand the value of pitchers like this in a league like this, particularly if you play in like leagues with daily moves where you can just freely pick people up whenever you want and just stream starters or whatever. Or they play like 10 or 12 team. But in a 15-team league with weekly fab, like Green is really valuable.
Yeah. No, he's a terrific guy to, you know, hold down your ratios. You know, especially since, you know, Chris Flexen is one of my starters.
No, again, 15-team league, like we all have. You know, I've got Nick Pivetta. Like, you know, I like Pivetta, but, you know, I've got Nick Pivetta as my, like, he's on reserve, but my last starter. We're all going to have one or two arms like that in a league like this. It's just inevitable. Right.
No, but, you know, Green is terrific. I mean, gives you strikeouts, holds down the ratios, and, you know, if Chapman gets hurt, he's got a shot at some saves.
Even if Chapman's healthy, you know, he hasn't pitched over like 60. I don't even think it's quite 60. It might be 58, but he hasn't pitched over 60 innings in like 5 or 6 years. And like the Yankees just use him that way. Even if he's healthy, I think, and it's a smart philosophy. And I think more teams are doing it and now with the expanded playoffs, you're going to see it more. Teams are like, well, why are we going to burn our closer out, you know, in the regular season and have him have nothing when we know we're going to need these bullets in the postseason? So I could see Green getting even more saves where the Yankees are like, you know what? We don't need Aroldis Chapman to be a 40-save guy. Like, we just need... And Chapman probably doesn't care because he's not getting another big contract. He's not even going to manage and say, hey, like, this is, you know, influencing my next payday. Like, this is... I mean, he might get another contract, but he's not going to get another mega deal from the Yankees or anyone else. So, yeah, I like Green and I like pitchers like that. And, you know, if I have a minor quibble with my draft, it's I didn't really get anyone like that. So that was a solid pick.
Green, you know, you talk about Chapman in 60 innings. Green threw 83 innings.
Yeah, he's a rubber arm. Like, it's funny. It's funny. Somebody I took in Labor NL who I almost wish I took here was Craig Stauman of the Padres. Like, he's sort of a similar, doesn't get as many saves, but just a very similar arm. Genesis Cabrera is another one with the Cardinals. I noticed I got him on reserve in Labor NL, and I feel like ever since I did that, people who the worst thing about being, you know, fantasy baseball famous is people eventually start to see what you're doing and then they wind up like taking every player you did, or they start copying you in other drafts. It's nice, but it's also annoying where it's like, I kind of wish I were still doing this behind a curtain. So like I said, I would love to go over every pick, but is there anyone else? I guess, first of all, any player or players on your end that you want to highlight? And then second of all, just the overall, I guess, vibe of your team. Like, you know, where do you think you did well? Where do you think you might have come up short?
All right. So, I think one player I grabbed that I think is going to end up being very valuable for me is Tristan Casas. Another Red Sox player. He's eligible at third base, according to...
He is? I'm going to have to look that up. I wonder if they'll change that, though, because...
It's possible.
Yeah, it's one of those things that sometimes... Well, what's interesting is sometimes they don't catch that, so you might catch a break there. It depends.
And the reason I took him is because I'm a little nervous about my corner infielders, Chapman being one of them. Mm-hmm. And I also have Carlos Santana, who I'm banking on a bounce back.
I actually like Santana. It's not that I don't like him. The problem I have is like they have Nick Prado, and even if Santana is actually doing well, it's quite possible they can be like, well, we can trade him because we have Prado waiting in the wings.
Yeah. So I'm a little nervous about my corner infielders there. That's one of the reasons why I grabbed Casas.
Okay.
Strengths. I think I did much better in pitching this year. I really like my staff. I think I've got a pretty good group. And
I'm gonna pull up your team view here because it's a little bit easier to see. I was looking at rounds.
My starting staff is Berrios, Tristan mm-hmm. McKenzie, Urquidy, Jose Urquidy.
Yeah, Urquidy, I really like. I know he's a Brett Serra favorite as well. I finally got one of him in an AL only I did a couple nights ago. So yeah.
Yep. And then I've got Eduardo Rodriguez, Eliezer Hernandez, who I think is much better than what people give him credit for, and then Aaron Nola. So I've got a pretty good starting staff, and then I've got those three closers. I feel like my pitching staff is much, much stronger this year. And if I pick a week,
yes,
I have enough speed. I never have enough speed.
Yeah. So I'm looking, yeah, so I'm looking at, which is interesting, you got Turner. So I'm looking, I ran, and this was on the 8th, so things have changed because players have changed destinations. So I ran this through the Axe because I was curious to see, you know, where you came out. And, yeah, it looks like you're like middle of the pack and or a little bit higher than that in whip and ERA. You're decent in saves. You're lower in wins and strikeouts. But the thing about that is you can always kind of churn and find players and cycle people through. So that never worries me as much. I'm almost more worried if you're, like, for me, if I'm low in ERA and whip, because that's like, uh-oh, like that might be a hole. And then on the offensive side, I think you're dead on. Like, your runs, home runs you project first. RBI and runs you're really strong. Steals you're low, although not super low. It's funny, on base is actually your weak category according to the Axe. You're next to last, so I don't have the reasoning behind it. Now I don't know if you saw this, the projections, the HQ projections are up on Roto. Well, what's funny about the Axe, I didn't draft directly off the Axe, but it shows me, and this is before Smith got traded, but it shows me like ridiculously far ahead of everybody, which I kind of laugh at because it's like, well, I mean. You know, it's my projection system. So HQ's projections are up now on Roto, and I think they have, yeah, they have Ray Murphy of Baseball HQ, surprise, surprise, you know, way ahead of the rest of us. It's a similar thing. And then Rudy Gamble of Razzball in a solid second. And then it's a clump, like pretty much from DJ Short in third down to you. It's like a 5-point differential in eighth. Which means, yes, you're in eighth, but you're 5 points out of third in the hypotheticals. And it's a similar story, like second in saves according to this, second in whip, really low in ERA, oddly enough, and then yeah, strong in the three counting categories. Actually, HQ has you really low in steals and a little bit stronger in on base, but low in both. So yeah, I don't know, like I'm not sure why. What's funny about the HQ projections for me is they have me, I think, with 6 points, projected points at on base. I know this is not the most interesting listening, but the Axe has me with 10 points at on base. So I'm kind of wondering, I think some of it's a Gallo projection. Like the Axe really likes Gallo. I don't know if you noticed that or not when you were putting your, you know, list together. I was actually a little bit surprised. I'm like, why? I mean, I get it, but you know, I get Yankee Stadium and all. They have him 35 homers, 95 runs batted in, 92 runs, 353 on base, you know, and 561 plate appearances, which for that relative few of plate appearances is really, it's something. I mean, he's ahead of Pete Alonso, and I think the reason of Pete Alonso is, you know, just because, it's because of the steals, actually. Like, they're really close otherwise, and realistically, if I had draft slot aside, if I take Alonso or Gallo, I want Alonso, of course. So it's one of those, it's like I said before, it's those things where you got to take projection with a grain of salt, and I think that's when you build your rankings. You're like, okay, I know what the Axe says. And you know, if you're listening to this podcast, people are always like, why should I just use the Axe? It's like, well, you can. You know, if you're comfortable taking Joey Gallo at 28 overall or a little, you know, be maybe like a little bit after that because no one's got the same list you do, fine. But, you know, you should think about the fact that you don't have to do that. Yeah. So anything else to add to the proceedings? I don't think we're ready to make an on-air trade, but maybe we'll wind up talking. This is a trade league, which is something I like.
Yeah. You know, in fact, I made a trade with Ray Murphy last year. And that actually is the reason why I ended up where I ended up. It was a great little trade.
What'd you do?
I got Sean Manea and oh gosh, what's his name? The first baseman for Milwaukee.
There were so many. Vogelbach.
Jeez, I can't remember the kid's name now.
Castanura.
No,
I've got this year on the brain.
I can't remember his name. Son of a gun.
Well, they constantly like move stuff around, so it's just one of those things, yeah. Where I'm
anyway.
I'm
trying to, you know,
was it Rowdy? Was it Rowdy? Well, no, he was at the Jays later. So
you're right. It was Urias.
Oh, okay. I wasn't thinking of him as a first baseman. That's why.
He's not a first baseman, but he played that last year. So I got Urias and Sean Manea, and what did I send him? Oh boy, I apologize, Mike. I can't remember the names of the players.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you know, it's funny because when I first started playing these leagues, I remember being so excited. And, you know, doing like a blow-by-blow and this, that, and the other. And I've been in them so long. It's not that I'm jaded. It's just that it all starts to blur together. Like, I still find it exciting, but it just all starts to blur together as, like, as big, like, oh, my gosh. Like, I can't remember this trade or this pickup. And some of it is just getting older, honestly. Like, I don't know about you. Like, I remember when I was, like, a kid, I could rattle off the lineup of like every team, you know, I could just like rattle off the lineups and like rattle off like, you know, the pitching staffs. And now I have to look everything up. It's sad.
I have to have everything in front of my nose. Otherwise I can't remember. I mean,
yeah,
no, I'm 60. So
yeah, you've got a few, not as many as you think, but you've got a few years on me. So yeah.
So, And the other problem is that, you know, I played in 11 leagues last year.
Yeah, I was in 9 or 10, and I've cut out 2 or 3. I'm kind of like getting to the point where I'm like, well, enough is enough, and I need to like not have like my fab day be a chore where I'm looking at like 10 teams and being like, I hate this now.
Yeah, I cut back to 7.
Yeah, I did too. That's what I'm doing this year. I'm doing 7. I think 1 or 2 I'm partnering with people, so I'm not even really doing 7. I'm kind of doing like maybe 5.5.
my hope is that I can, you know, it's always the expert leagues that end up getting short shrift because several of the other leagues that I play in are for money. And so, mm-hmm. you know, when you're playing for money, you got to be a little bit more serious.
You also tend to know people in those leagues, so they you know, they give you the business and they might be difficult with you and they might razz you, whereas you know, people are, I won't say they're nicer in the expert leagues, but they tend to be, you know, more polite and not nearly as jerky. Like I know people in some of those like local leagues can be savage.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know about you, like, you know, since I've become an expert, like, it's even worse because it's a no-win, and that if you win, it's like, well, you're supposed to win. You know, you're the expert. If you come in ninth, people might laugh and point because they're like, ha-ha, you know, I beat the expert. Like, it's a...
How can you possibly be an expert?
Right. How even though it's like, well, most of these leagues are keeper, and, you know, some years, not that I'm not trying, but I don't have the, you know, I went for it last year. I don't have the hand that I, you know, had the year before. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like I always love to tell a story about my home league. You know, I've been in, this is a league I've been in now for 22 years. And I won it like 6 times in the 22 years.
Yeah, my home league is that.
Time was 2015.
Yeah, my home league is like that too. I've been in it for 25 years at this point, and I've won it 7 times, and although I've won a little more recently, but it's a similar thing where, you know, I the years I don't win, people are like, ha ha, and I'm like, well, I mean, there's 12 people in it, and I've like won it like about one year every 3 or, you know, 3 point something. So I think that's pretty good. And honestly, I don't know about you, if I were in a league where I could win every other year, I probably would leave at some point, because I'd be like, well, like, it's one thing to have knowledge, another thing to just be like, well, I'm trouncing people because they're not really engaged or they're not, like, involved. And I don't know about you, I've left leagues like that where I can kind of be like, well, I mean, yeah, I could win, but what's the point? Like, it's just not really, like, engaging.
I really dislike leagues where people are not engaged.
Well, me too. I mean, it sucks the... Outside of people who want to argue about the rules like night and day, like that's the worst, but that's the second worst, is when people aren't engaged, people aren't interested, and you have to kind of hound them down and be like, you know, are you going to submit your freezes? Like, don't forget this, don't forget that. At some point you're like, yeah, I just don't want to.
Been some time.
Right. I just don't want to, you know, we all like once in a while that happens, but if it's every... It's every week. I'll, you know, I don't know about you. Like, you know, we've got a freeze coming up in the one keeper local league I have left, like on Sunday. That's a long-standing league I'm in that I've been in since, like I said, for about 25 years now. And, like, there was this guy in this league, he was just so unengaged, and one year he went on vacation to Amsterdam, like, the week before the freeze, which is fine, you know, whatever, but he didn't put his freezes in, and we're all kind of sitting there like, what? Like, why wouldn't you, you know, like, just send an email, you know, it takes, like, 5 minutes. It was just so, you know, frustrating and annoying, and, like, he eventually left, and he left in part because there was somebody who was louder than me who was, like, complaining about him and, you know, getting annoyed and getting belligerent, and it just kind of led to a, like, a bad situation. And the thing was, this was, like, a really nice guy. It just wasn't, it's just that thing of, like, well, like, this just wasn't, it just wasn't a good fit. Yeah. Yep. So, it was great having you on, Tim. We should definitely do this again at some point. So don't cut out yet. We, you know, if you listen, we'll take a breath here. There won't be anything for us to do, but I'll just catch my breath and then we'll do the outro. So we'll be right back. Thanks once again for listening to episode 282 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy baseball podcast. Don't forget, if you don't do so already, please subscribe to Baseball Prospectus, where you can support me, Tim, and several of the other fantasy writers. Our coverage of the preseason's wrapping up, but that we are here all year. We are not a site that does football, as you know by the name. This is Baseball Prospectus. That would be a great slogan. So there'll be about 15 articles a week, maybe 10 to 15 articles a week on fantasy baseball. Tim does the closers. I do Fab. We do some freeform articles as well. So please stay with us. Once again, for Mike Chanel and Tim McCullough, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back with you soon.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.